I mean, like, that's why I'm not taking showers anymore, Jeff. Like, the scabies is really bad, and there's this really debilitating rickets that's kind of set in, but, you know, not showering is actually more effective at fighting bacteria, and that's why you shouldn't vaccine your kids either. And hello and welcome again, everybody, to Not Another Magic Podcast. It's been a really goddamn long time since we last recorded. That's starting to become a common theme, I think.
Yeah, Money Draft is starting to catch back up with us.
Yeah, if we were a fun set and we actually had a mechanic, ours would be Suspend Infinity. Or Meh Suspend. That would be ours.
Yeah. It's like Suspend, but you like flip a coin in your upkeep to see if a counter actually comes off.
And you know, it may not, you know, if you're not in the right kind of mood, you don't have to flip that coin if you don't want to. You can just cancel out Infinity, like record an episode that never gets aired, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, folks,
yeah, I do have to give a shout out and apology to Emma Handy. We recorded an episode, like right after Shadows Over and Estrade released, and I didn't get to editing it in time, and we did a lot of talking about, like, you know, what is Standard gonna look like now? And it got to the point where it just wasn't gonna be timely anymore. And I try not to talk about things that are that timely for that very reason, but, you know, Emma is a bit of a Standard expert. You know, grinding on that SCG circuit, so.
I can actually verify this, too. I have watched Emma play for, God, I've known her since I think I was 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. Like, she was actually one of the first, like, high-level Magic players that I personally met.
Yeah, and she also then went in and top 16'd Baltimore. So, like.
Dude, she is fucking crazy to watch play. Like, I am dead serious when I say this. I've only met two people that had the level of raw natural talent that, like, Emma has. One of them is my friend Hilario, who I've read about a couple of times. Like, Hilario could get a pile of shit and still top 8 in FNM. It was just crazy watching him. But, Emma, she is ridiculously talented. Like, I honestly am surprised that Emma has not made the Pro Tour yet. She's amazing to watch. Mm-hmm. But all that said, folks, if this is your first time tuning in, or it's been so long that the fog of your mind has obscured our identities from you, I am Jack LaCroix, the former most hated man in Magic, which we'll all touch on that later at some point, I guess. And joining me tonight, we have the man at arms, the hibernating polar bear of editing, Jeff.
I am indeed here. I have survived another winter to roam the forests of the Great North.
What is, like, the first thing you say when you come out of your hibernation? Because, you know, like, bears, like, growl and poop. Like, people don't know that. Bears actually, like, plug their butt when they go to hibernate so they don't poop. So, like, the first thing they do is probably growl, scratch, and then they just, like, shit all over themselves.
Take the biggest dump. Well, that's what it's like for me, too. I just take the biggest fucking dump imaginable. Like, yeah.
Wow. Okay, we are starting off classy here. And since we've last recorded, a whole way too much goddamn shit has happened in Magic. Like, way too fucking much. Do we just want to go ahead and dive in? Do we want to talk about what we've been up to? Like, what do you want to do?
Sploosh!
Sploosh! Right into this Pro Tour bullshit that's been going on. So, alright, folks. If you play Magic at all whatsoever, and you actually... Or I should specify, if you pay attention to Magic on social networking at all, you're probably aware that some Pro Tour changes were announced slightly before people who had worked very, very hard to get onto the Pro Tour were able to participate in the Pro Tour. Basically, Wizards said they were going to cut Platinum benefits for Platinum players.
I think Platinum and Hall of Fame, which I think are kind of the same, but...
Yeah. Like, basically, they were going to cut benefits, which is anything like, from an appearance fee to, you know, your hotel getting comped, to that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just the appearance fee is what they were cutting down. And they were cutting it, like, over 90%, from, like, $3,000 to $250. Like, that's now, not just a, you know, we want to reallocate some money. That's a big old fucking, is what that was.
Yeah, because that basically means that, like, the people who, everybody in the Magic community, except for me, necessarily, look up to, couldn't necessarily continue to actually travel and, quote-unquote, live the dream of being a Magic pro. And so, basically, everybody and their brother who's on MTG Twitter, not all the players, but everybody and their brother went to the rally cry for the pro players and got these changes successfully reversed in, what was it, 2 days? Something like that, Jeff?
2 days, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Tuesday, it, they had gone back on it.
Yeah, it wasn't an enormous turnaround time. That was the amazing part about this is everybody went to bat for what is, and I've done the math, 0.00001% of the total Magic population. Okay. Now, as somebody who does not really pay much attention to Pro Magic, and as somebody who does not really take competitive anything very seriously, there were understandably a lot of people who were like, well, why should we care about the pro players? And some very valid points were actually brought up during the discussion where people say, you know, hey, pros are the face of the game, they're the ambassadors of the game and things like that. But honestly, the most relevant thing to take away from this entire sordid, drawn out, long affair is that Wizards of the Coast has, I don't even want to say Wizards, I want to say Hasbro, because those are actually the people at fault when Wizards of the Coast appears to do something stupid, okay?
Yeah.
Hasbro is completely out of touch with how Magic actually functions.
Yep.
And a lot of the time, like, you know, everybody was super upset at Wizards of the Coast, but that's not actually who usually makes these decisions. It's some bean counter in accounting at Hasbro that's like, oh man, we're giving these people $3,000 to just show up? Mm-hmm. To hell with this, we'll slash the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine like some Hasbro accountant who doesn't know what Magic is was like, we're spending what on Platinum what? How much?
Yeah, like a lot of these touches. Yeah, whenever you see something like this, or like, you know, whenever some controversy happens in the community that causes this kind of backlash, just remember, folks, it's never like Mark Rosewater or Helen Bergio or people like this. They are just the figureheads that wind up on the chopping block. It's usually Hasbro that makes these super shitty decisions. So the biggest thing you should take away from this, first of all, is that Hasbro still has absolutely no goddamn idea how this community functions, period. That's the biggest thing to take away. And they're going to continue to fuck it up, despite the fact that Magic makes them a shit ton of money. Okay? Not necessarily compared to other things, but still, Magic makes them a shit ton of money, and they don't know how to manage it. Now, the other thing to take away from this, too, and this is honestly the most important thing, regardless of how you feel about pro players, is this, like, WotC is in a written Hasbro, too, okay? They're in this very strange, like, quagmire relationship with players who are in the know. And I say players in the know because players in the know who are people who, like, surf Twitter, listen to things like this shitty podcast, and, you know, are actually engaged with the larger Magic community on a bigger scale, they make up a minority of the player base. These things, God, where was I going with this? These kinds of things leave a really shaky relationship between Hasbro and these people.
Mm-hmm.
And while that doesn't seem that all-consuming, and while a lot of people, you know, automatically assume that because you're engaged in the larger Magic community, like, your opinion really matters, casual players still drive the majority of sales for Magic the Gathering, because that's really what all of this is about, is it's about money, okay? It's not about screwing over pro players or anything like that. It's really about money. So when things like this happen, it's not Hasbro or WotC specifically going out of their way to target people or anything like that. They didn't necessarily want to break your trust. But the fallout from this is we do wind up with this shaky relationship between people like me and Jeff and other people who produce content, who enjoy the game, who are on Twitter every single day talking about the game. And, that's really, really bad. And the reason that this is bad is because, and Jeff, I'm way over talking you tonight. I apologize for that. You know, when you go to your local game store, I want you to imagine yourself as somebody who really doesn't know that much about Magic, but you see people playing it at your card store and you think it looks fun. All it takes is one guy in the card store being like, dude, you don't want to play that. Like the company that runs that game is horrible. You know, that kind of thing. And it really damages sales. Mm-hmm. So I guess my biggest hope out of everything that's happened over the last couple of hours, and I'm going to refrain from expressing my personal opinion on this entire thing, is that I really hope that people at Hasbro who are in charge of these kinds of decisions take 5 minutes next time and realize they're not just impacting themselves with established players, because this is something Hasbro has historically had a problem with, is retaining players who are aware of their business decisions. But I really honestly hope they realize, like, the effects that these kinds of decisions can have with potential customers as well.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to say, Jeff? Because like I said, I have a lot of personal thoughts on this, but I'm going to refrain, because otherwise this podcast is going to be an hour of profanity.
Yeah. For me, I was initially, when I first heard the news and didn't have all the details, was initially in the, like, yeah, people are overreacting. Like, one of my first tweets about it was, like, quoting somebody like, the sky is falling!
Yeah, like, I remember
like,
that.
Magic's not dying, it's not, this would not have killed it. But this would have been bad, because really, the community does revolve around pro-level play. Like, we get a lot of deck, like, a lot of our information on the format is informed by the Pro Tour. And it's also, like, most of the, like, the biggest personalities in Magic who, if you think about it, are marketing for Wizards, are those pros who would have been affected by this. So, like, you can, you know, you probably can name more platinum level pros than you think. And probably you can name more of the platinum level pros than like other pros that are just like gold or silver. So, even if you think they're a small part of the community, they're a large percentage of the people you know from Magic.
And see, this actually brings up a really good point. Wizards actually has this, and it's not just pro players. It's cosplayers. It's like people like me and you who produce content for them, who occasionally get jobs doing like, you know, announcements or something like that at tournaments. Wizards has a very strange, like, quasi business relationship with the prominent members of this community.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and with
pro
judges,
player,
but that's another story.
Oh God, don't even get me started. But yeah, like pro players, regardless of the fact that, you know, they're not specifically employed by WotC, their marketing points.
Mm-hmm.
They make sure to accommodate these people because these people do draw crowds.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff, you've been to GPs, and like if Patrick Chapin or somebody was sitting there, the crowd was 30 people deep just to watch that person play. You know,
mm-hmm.
How often do these people get like hundreds of thousands of people for like a midweek fucking stream on whatever website it is they're doing
mm-hmm.
it for? You know, so yeah. These people are excellent marketing for Wizards of the Coast,
yeah,
and they
and
don't
I think
know how to treat them.
Yeah, I think this decision, if anything, does show that they don't understand the value of those pros. Like, the whole reason they did this was to put more money into the Magic World Cup.
Right.
And, like, Worlds, basically, the World Championships, so that it would have, like, this big, shinier prize purse and would hopefully then compete more with sort of other things that are streaming on Twitch. Basically,
right.
To competing in the esports space, like at least the Twitch space for like viewers, and they don't realize that the reason a lot of those things work is the personalities of the people streaming. And
exactly,
those high level pros are those personalities, and some of them are just, you know, stone cold machines who are like, you know, just Magic playing robots just about, and they're awesome at Magic, but don't really produce content otherwise and don't stream a whole lot because they're not the most, but most of them, the vast majority of pros are interesting people too. That, and that's, personalities are our currency in digital media. That's just a fact.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, if some schmuck like me can get 1,000 followers on Twitter just by cursing, posting anime titties and producing a podcast,
mm-hmm.
like, you have to realize the potential
hosting a podcast,
that,
Jack, hosting.
Or hosting a podcast, posting a podcast. I don't actually do any real work at Card Confidants. Everybody knows this.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
just
yeah.
a pretty face. But like, if some schmuck like me can get 1,000 followers, and then you like, what I guess what I'm trying to say is, Jeff, you're absolutely correct. Wizards of the Coast does not know how to market their free marketing is the best way to put it. They
yeah,
completely,
and,
go ahead.
Yeah. A podcast that I don't normally listen to, I tuned into, which is the SED Talks with Cedric Phillips and Adrian Sullivan. And, you know, they were talking about how people have said one of the differences between Wizards and Star City is Wizard sells cards and Star City sells, like, characters. Like, they sell
yeah.
people, like the players. You know, so the reason they do, like, the whole invitational thing and, you know, and have people come and write when, you know, when they do well is that though they understand those are the people they're marketing. And, you know, when people know those names, they're gonna come out more.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's tons of people in our community who are like that. And when you have changes like this happen, it really darkens the dream of furthering your interest in Magic for mm-hmm. people like that. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, Emma, we were talking about her a moment ago. This really bothered Emma when this came out. And even mm-hmm. she said, you know, this makes me not want to get on the Pro Tour. Changes like this don't just affect the 0.00001% of Magic players. It actually affects the rest of that percentile as well. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much, I guess that's all I have to say on it. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I mean, I was personally just impressed at how the early responses were Magic is dying, / shut the fuck up, pros, we don't care about you. And pretty quickly, once people, like, you know, figured out what was really going on, the community really did rally and unite. There was, like, by Monday night, there pretty much everyone was saying pay the pros.
Yeah.
And I was on board with that, too. From a very, starting at a pretty skeptical place about it. Because also, like, man, those appearance fees for, like, Hall of Famers, that's why Finkel came back to Magic. Like, people, like, are like, oh, man, he top-aided his, like, 15th pro tour of his career, which is mind-boggling. And there were several years that he didn't play. Like, he, you know, like, he had done pretty well, and then he went off and, you know, was doing, like, his day job, whatever, which is pretty good. And, you know,
he's
got in the Hall of Fame.
He's a hedge fund manager, isn't he?
Yeah, it's in finance or something.
Yeah.
But it was that getting to the Hall of Fame and getting that appearance fee. He's like, all right, I like this game. I'll come back out to the Pro Tour. And, like one of the, like, his first Pro Tour back or something, he talked because he's absurd. And without, like, those appearance fees, Finkel would have just moved on from Magic, that would have been it. Like, he might still be playing, you know, in his apartment with, like, Mike Flores and stuff, and, you know, whoever, other legends of Magic history, but wouldn't have gotten back to the Pro Tour. Like, just wouldn't have put in what it, you know, the effort to, you know, win GPs or whatever, I don't know.
Right. See, like, while I personally, I've always been much more affected by the people in my local community who, you know, were mentors to me and influenced me to play better. I would be remiss if I honestly didn't admit that John Finkel was the reason I wanted to get into Magic, and mm-hmm. it started with Tinker back in, Mask Block. Like, watching him play that deck was sick, and it was completely free fucking bonkers mm-hmm. to just watch John play. And that honestly is what got me into it. And, you know, to quote Mike Flores from an episode of a podcast that no longer exists, I did, watching John Finkel play is like having the Stone Age tribe go against the Starship Enterprise. He's just going to slaughter you. Yeah. And every time he gets on a Pro Tour and I see he's on camera, I usually tune in for just a few minutes for nostalgia. But I would honestly miss seeing his face on the Pro Tour. And so regardless of what you personally feel about pros, it's important to keep them in the community, at least as visible marketing for the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, like, they're called pros because they get some money just for going to these events, but they don't, no one really makes a living just going to tournaments.
Yeah.
Everyone, like, all these people who are platinum level pros or Hall of Famers either have a day job, or, like, that's non-Magic related, or their full-time job is, like, making Magic content.
Which, by the way, folks, unless you are a pro player, does not pay very well.
Nope.
So, yeah, like, in all sincerity...
When are we going to start that Patreon, man? We should do that.
I'm on it. I'm on it. If you pay us $1 a month, I promise we'll talk about Cox less on this podcast.
Or more.
Or more.
It's up to the patrons, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, if you're not a pro player, folks, Magic content doesn't pay a whole hell of a lot. So it's not something that is viable unless you're at that level of play. And while, again, this is probably something that might come as a shock to a lot of you, cutting the purse didn't seem like that big of a deal because you think these people, you know, oh, they have all this other stuff they can do. It's not that. They would have had to have relied on that. Yeah. Okay? And I promise you, websites do not pay nearly as much as you think they do. Like, you know, I'll throw some figures out. If you're a Joe Schmo and you decide to go write for, you know, a website, and let's say you're a Commander player and they don't have a current Commander content writer, you're probably going to get $20 or $15 in store credit. Okay? That's the going rate per article that's roughly 3,000 words and in depth every single time you write it. If you're a, you know,
And you're going to spend several hours writing that.
Yeah. But if you're like
hourly is bullshit on writing.
Yeah. No. Yeah, you're not going to make that kind of money. If you're like a tournament grinder and you top 16 some GPs, but you have a decent following of people in the Magic community, you might get like $100 an article. Maybe. If you're really, really lucky and you work out a sweet deal. Pro players, in all honesty, and this is excluding the streams, the sponsorships, and everything else that you get. The figure I heard from somebody one time, and I'm not going to say who, was $500. Which, you know, you're like, oh man, $500. Yeah, think about how far $500 actually fucking goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm kind of sick and tired of talking about this, because again, I'm going to get into cursing about the Magic community at large if I keep going. So let's move on to something else.
It was also shitty because it overshadowed what was otherwise a great Pro Tour, by all accounts. I wasn't able to really pay a lot of attention, but 8 different decks in the top 8.
Which is great.
Including some really, really sweet stuff.
Yeah. And it's also very unfortunate that this happened roughly the same time the Enter the Battlefield documentary dropped.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Like, regardless of like how you feel about Wizards and Hasbro, the documentary I finally sat down and watched it the other day, despite being bitter about the Magic community, and it was actually fairly well produced, and they put a lot of work into it. It's worth your time, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, that's also Christine's
just unfortunate timing that they were dropping this thing that's like pros as PR, and that's clearly like one hand not talking to the other. Like,
yeah, and the other thing that's actually overshadowed too, which is worth picking up, and I think we can talk about this for a little bit, Jeff. I think we've mentioned this a time or two before. Christine Sprankle actually got some steam raised on something like a Magic convention.
Mm-hmm.
Not a GP, not a tournament, just a convention. And so, like, I honestly think this is a really good fucking idea, because as somebody who has zero interest in competitive Magic, but shows up to GPs just to hang out and talk to people I only ever talk to through the internet otherwise. I think something like a Magic convention is honestly what the community needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something I've been thinking about this and writing about it for quite a while. I started writing some stuff last summer that I'm now editing and I'm going to put back out. I know Vorthos Mike has talked about it a lot. Going back to after the first GP Vegas, like, Kibler wrote a thing about it, how, like, Vegas was so big, like, this is getting close to being, you know, more like a convention, and the second Vegas was a lot closer, because especially if you realize how many people registered and dropped from the main event. Like, there were 8,000-something, like, people in that played in the main event. There were another, like, 2,000 that registered. And just registered and left. So, that was enormous. And then more people who probably just didn't make it to the site and were just off somewhere else getting drunk and playing Booze Cube.
The SVU house. Shout out to the SVU.
What I've been kind of jamming on is that I think we're reaching a limit to what Grand Prix as the focus can be in terms of size. Like, I don't, like, you can't do Vegas all the damn time. And just the draw for competitive play is kind of limited. And also just the way they're handled, in that really the only things to do that are run by organized by the tournament organizer are the main event and side events that are basically tournaments. And buying and selling with vendors. And they'll bring in artists, but there's only so much you can do with, like, spend time with artists. Spend as much as I can, but sort of these other activities beyond playing Magic and buying things are pretty limited. And I don't see any impetus from, or any ambition from tournament organizers to change that. I think they've got a pretty good deal with the money they take in from vendors, and, you know, the financial aspect of buying cards and selling cards to people at the events. Like, you know, a lot of times they're reticent to buy bigger space when it is available. So, like, a lot of times GPs are getting capped. So there's, you know, a limit to how many people can actually participate. And so, like, their business model doesn't really want to scale that much bigger than, like, the 2,000 to 3,000 person tournaments that are kind of standard these days. And That would be small for a convention.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also different considerations to take into this, because I feel like as a TO, like, convention is a lot harder to plan out than something like a tournament. Because, you know, when it comes to something like Magic, the main focus is obviously going to be on play and vendors. Okay, but what if you can get, like, an artist? What if you can get, like, a podcast or stuff like that? I don't feel like any one TO is, I hate to say this, organized enough to understand the needs of the people who would be attending for it to be an appealing sale to a lot of people. It's something I want to have happen. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how you would, like, go about getting something that would draw enough people, you know?
Yeah, I think the only existing TOs that could do it are the ones that already have content teams. Like Star City or Channel Fireball, I think,
right,
have the people in-house already who could figure it out and make it happen. But in general, you would need way more paid, dedicated staff to do a convention compared to a GP. Because at a GP, most of your staff is judges who are, you know, compensated but not paid.
Right.
And, you know, all the vendors kind of do their own thing. So, like, you know, they're, most of the people who are TOs are largely vendors, you know, just one big vendor, and you know, a lot of them have very little in terms of content. Like that's not the standard model, because most people are like, yeah, we're not gonna try to compete with the big guys in that respect. We're just gonna buy and sell, and that's fine for them. That's their business model, and it works. But I think ultimately we might need to take, if we want to turn GPs into conventions, we need to turn them over to a team that's not a current tournament organizer. And I think TOs might, you could continue, like, what they do in terms of organizing the tournament and the vendors, yeah, they're useful for doing that. But I think it's going to take, you know, a dedicated, you know, GP or convention planning team that they are, you know, a part of that team, you know, and are, you know, subordinate to someone who's, you know, the main event organizer, to make that happen. I think also people with convention planning experience, not just Magic tournament planning experience.
Yeah, because like people who think the concept of like a Magic convention is just going to sell itself, you guys need to go to a lot of conventions. You need to go to like a lot of shitty conventions too to realize what it would take to actually market a Magic convention.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, have you ever heard about TumblrCon, Jeff?
No, but my imagination is running wild.
Oh my God. Okay, so story time.
So everyone right. cosplays slash Vic. That's
okay. No, well, not just that, okay? Like, so basically this kind of started the same way, and this is a good parable for how things can go horribly wrong. So Tumblr announced that they were going to have a convention, and when I say Tumblr, I mean like a bunch of popular blogs got together and somehow raise the money to make this like a thing. Now keep in mind, what actually like makes a convention viable is not like just the convention happening. Like it's stuff sold at the convention that pays for the space that makes it worthwhile for everybody. So somehow they managed to have this convention with like two vendors in a massive place that attracted like I think about 2,000 people, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally the vendors ran out in the first hour and they could not make enough money to cover the expense of the convention, right?
Yeah, because there's two ways that these events make their money, and sort of the passes, like sort of the people registering, and there's, you had to be very careful about where you put that price point, in terms of, you know, getting enough people to come, and also still making enough money to pay for the amount of people that are coming, and the vendors, like vendors pay money also based on how many people are going to be there.
Right. Okay. So, what ended up happening is the people who organized this were going to pay like the bloggers and stuff out of what came out of like the vendor cash that they earned. Right. So they didn't make enough money to actually pay anybody that showed up. So you have all these fucking people here who are now like basically not going to have enough money to get home. And so just crazy shit was happening. Like people were like signing bananas for $5 and all this shit. But the biggest story that came out of this is, somebody promised that they would bring like a ball pit, right? Like a giant like ball pit house that people could get in. So the ball pit was actually an inflatable kiddie pool that had a bunch of balls in it. So, of course, somebody took a piss in the ball pit, right? Like, because this had to happen. And, yeah, basically, go read up on the history of TumblrCon, because I promise you, your wildest imaginations will not produce something as bad as what actually happened. And yeah, that's go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of first-time cons run into problems like that, where, like, they don't really understand the financials of it and the work involved and stuff like that. Are very poor at estimating how many guests they'll have, like, or, you know, how many attendees they'll have and things like that. One example of one that did work out, though, is one that I actually went to recently at the beginning of, second weekend of April, Bangor Comic and Toy Convention in Bangor fucking Maine, in its second year, was kind of a lot of fun.
What was it exactly? Just comics and different vendors and people?
Yeah, so things they did right are, and this is kind of made possible by like a new, fairly new civic center and convention space that was built there a few years ago. And, so there's kind of an arena section, and then there's, meeting rooms and kind of, you know, a decent size, like 17,000 square foot ballroom. And that's where this was primarily happening. And one, they had a shitload of vendors, which is good. And they covered a wide variety of nerdery. So, like, there was comic book related stuff. There's TV and movie related stuff. There's, like, professional and independent wrestling related stuff. So they covered their bases. They, you know, shotgunned their demographic and, you know, brought in people of all kinds. They also were able to snag some pretty good guests. Like last year, in their first year, they had Billy Dee Williams, which I was really sad I didn't get to go see. But this year they had, Nichelle Nichols, who's still kicking, and she was cool, and Colin Baker, the fucking Sixth Doctor, which I was super thrilled about. So I was pretty psyched about that. He is my favorite doctor. And he was fantastic. His Q&A session, he just ran. It was like, and he was just really good at giving like good answers to bad questions, which is way harder than it sounds. Like the first question was literally, "What did you eat for breakfast?" And I was just like, "Oh god, this is gonna be bad."
Toy cons are actually pretty fun. Like the problem with toy cons is though, like having places to store the shit you want to buy. And having to justify the cost of the things you bought. Cause dude, there are some, like, especially because, like, the nerd community has just exploded in the last 10 years. There is some crazy fucking looking, like, action figures and desk statues out there now. Holy hell.
Yeah. Oh, there was I think the best cosplay I saw was a big, Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, that's great.
That thing was, well, it wasn't obstruction. It was large. But it was done really quite well and was impressive. So I think people didn't seem to really mind stopping and admiring it as it passed awkwardly. I think they, you know, it had a couple handlers and stuff. So it was good.
That's fantastic.
I was there like all of 10 minutes before I ran into someone else in a Fourth Doctor scarf. And we were actually by, this sort of professional photo booth company. And I was like, I'm just like, I've got a hat and a scarf. I'm not really in costume. They're like, you know, like you, and there was also like then like an 11th Doctor was walking by, and they're like, here, just let us take a picture, and so we can like put it up on, so we can have it on display and like as an example. And I'm like, all right, sure.
I think the craziest costume I've ever seen was, and it was for the San Diego Comic Con. Some guy actually built power armor. But it looked like it was like scrapped power armor, you know, like the shoulder pad was like a miles per hour sign and shit like that. That was pretty crazy looking.
Yeah.
All right. So we're done with magic. We're done talking about magic conventions. What the fuck?
I could talk a lot more about magic conventions. I was talking a little about the financial stuff. And one thing that would have to happen is a magic convention would need a pass fee, like daily and weekend passes. And you'd have to sell those largely in advance as well as at the door, and so you pay for to be there, and then there's a bunch of activities including tournaments, and you could still maybe have a GP, you know, sized event. But yeah, the pricing model would have to change. like in terms of how people get in.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that would help something like that. Artists, cosplayers, obviously.
Yeah, I've got a list. Of things.
You know what would actually be really fucking cool, and I would love to sit in either a Vorthos panel or a Vorthos like quiz, like a Vorthos quiz booth, mm-hmm. where you could go in and actually like try to stump writers. That would be cool.
Yeah. Also, more like you know the shit we just had at GP Detroit. Where they had GP Detroit and the other two GPs that were happening that weekend, Wizards brought in a company to, like, set up escape rooms for being, like, I don't think I've even seen that at, like, you know, a convention, really. So, you know, outside, you know, maybe San Diego, someone did that, but, like, that's pretty crazy. And, like, I was listening to Sprankle talking about, like, everything that went into sort of the big reveal with her at Detroit. It was fantastic. It was like, all right, they fucking figured that out. They're finally letting her sell prints now. I saw at an event.
Thank goodness. That's a big deal.
Like prints of her in costume as Magic characters, which I think technically would be fine anyways, but Hasbro Legal is really uptight about shit. But yeah, like being like, okay, yeah, this is fine. This is not harming our brand. They've started letting artists on a limited basis make playmats of older Magic arts that Ultra Pro didn't use. Which I've been asking for that for years. So that's really cool. That's really good for those artists that are getting to do that, even if it's like just one or two arts at a time. Like I know Therese Nielsen was talking about doing some more. That might be a way to finally get like proper, like Chris Rush brainstorm mats, like from, like his people could put that together. People would buy that to support his family. It'd be awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so you had a GP you wanted to hype, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, an upcoming GP, which I'm not going to play in, Grand Prix Minneapolis, is Memorial Day weekend. I'm actually flying, like, Wednesday night, just because it was, like, $40 cheaper. I'm mostly going to be staying with Hobbs, who is a previous guest of ours, Dr. Q.
And he's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, I very much look forward to meeting him and all the other... Minnesota people, also like Alex Newman, who I met in Charlotte, is from that area. So I'll be seeing him. Someone that Mike mentioned, who's a JR, but not the Time Elemental JR. There's a different JR who's in Minnesota. And he's also like a fantasy sports guy. So I think, and Hobbs also does fantasy baseball. So I think like the Thursday night, we're going to do like a Magic baseball, sports, nerdery crossover meetup get together.
That sounds really fucking cool.
Yeah. Also, one of the guys in my Deep Dynasty League is from Minnesota, so I'll probably try to rope him in too. So that's
gonna damn, be... dude, you're gonna have a good time.
Yeah. Vorthos Mike's involved, so the artist lineup, I don't know how much he had to do with this, but the artist lineup is great. Including, you know, like, standards like, you know, RK Post is gonna be there. He's just, if it's a North American GP, he's probably there. And I might have some alterations for him too. But also, like, you know, one of the originals, Jesper Murfers, is going to be there. Jeff Miracola is going to be there. So, and guy who's pretty new, but is awesome, especially on Twitter, is, Victor Adame Minguez. He's super cool. And, I've heard he's also fun to hang out with, and I hope to get to hang out with him. I met him like super briefly at Quebec, but didn't really get to hang out. So, I have full faith that Vorthos Mike is putting together, you know, awesome stuff to do, like party or big dinner out. Alex Cito is putting together a food primer that'll be out at some point. He's also on Twitter. I'm not going to try to spell his handle right now. It'll be in the notes. And the big thing I'm going out there for, besides all the awesome people, is, Vintage Artist Constructed fucking tournament. I'm gonna call it Championship. I don't have the authority to put that branding on it, but it's gonna be a big one. Me versus Mike, Durfington's gonna be there. And I'm sure other people who are into it. So if you've gotten hooked on that, you can still get pretty cheap flights to Minneapolis right now. And hotels are not super expensive. So look into it. Hype, 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 hype. Speaking of which, speaking of Vintage Artists Constructed, I was just sleeping up my Alexei Bricklow deck, which is almost finished. Uh-huh. Ended up getting the M15 Liliana Vess sleeves, which I was hesitant to because they're like three color. So they're like black and white and purple.
Oh, beautiful.
But I'm like, well, but it's not really what the original card looks like. Like it's based on, like it takes that art, but then like kind of fucks with it a bunch. But there was nothing else that's actually in the deck that there are sleeves for. Like anything else would have been like cards not in it. Like Sarkhan Unbroken or the new Nihiri, stuff like that, which it doesn't get to play. Other stuff, like some odd things were done in like an RTR block, like Ixava Blood Witch has got sleeves. And
why though? That's so weird.
Because they did sleeves for every guild. Also, like the Skarg Guild Mage has sleeves. Like they went really hog wild with different sleeves in that block.
That's so fucking weird, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of things worth hyping, I guess I have something I can add here before we move on her in the podcast. So Whispers of the Old Gods actually dropped.
Mm.
Yeah.
Whispers over Innistrad?
No.
Shadows
no.
of
this
the
is,
Old Gods?
No. Just straight up whispering old Jesus's and whisperings of bad H.P. Lovecraft ripoffs. So anyways, the set's been out 2 days and people are already bitching.
Because, well, it took like, a whole 2 days.
A whole 2 days, yeah. Like, basically, Whisper of the Old Gods, like, when the set dropped, they gave everybody access to a card that says, hey, deal damage equal to this card's power randomly among all available targets, right? And the problem is there's a lot of cheap, very easy to craft cards that enhance this card's power and toughness regardless of where it's at in the deck. So what you have is a bunch of different archetypes popping up for every hero class around this certain card, the Thune, as it's pronounced. And, yeah, so people are just complaining nonstop about this deck. I'm going to be completely honest here with our listeners who actually tune in for Hearthstone content. I don't think Thune decks are that bad. Like, I'm playing Murloc Paladin right now, which is super, super fast, and then I unzip freaking Mysterious Challenger on turn 6 and I win. So I haven't had any real problems with Thune decks. I can see where they're going to be problematic. But, yeah, like, this is one of those instances in which it's very clear that Blizzard has very different R&D practices than, like, WotC does.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, hey, you want to give everybody a really cool legend? That's fine. All of the cards that are actually relevant to this archetype that enhance that certain card are commons or rares, which only cost 100 dust. Like, they're the cheapest cards you can possibly give people.
Yeah.
And so here we are, and everybody's testing out this deck. Because, of course, everybody found out the set was coming out, so they started just stockpiling the shit out of their dust. So everybody has access to all these cards, and it's just been like, it's been a weird couple of days, to be completely honest. A lot of people are trying out pet decks, and that's fine. There's never anything wrong with trying out pet decks, but right now, like, the competitive scene is so easy to prey upon with something that just takes the most direct path. Also, speaking of which, we actually have a new way to play Hearthstone Standard, which is kind of strange. Standard is basically like what Blizzard came up with to nerf a bunch of randomly problematic cards. They just completely, like, you can play Standard or Wild, which is the Hearthstone everybody knows and loves. And Standard is just the card sets from the last, the expansions from the last 2 years. Yeah. And Classic. It's
just like Magic Standard.
Yeah. Like, and, Standard's been interesting because it's all I've played for the last 48 hours. And it does a lot of weird things. Like, there's still a bunch of archetypes out there that are completely viable because they've only, like, came about thanks to Black Rock Mountain and Whispers of the Old Gods and the Grand Tournament, stuff like that. But then, there's also stuff that's just popping up all over the place that people are attempting. Like, Combo Priest is back, which is very, very strange. Control Priest is still super viable. I've been playing Murloc Paladin, like I said, which is actually, even though it's missing one of its key cards, is vicious. Like, I honestly don't know how to describe the list I'm currently, testing out is any other way than that. That's not me bragging. That's me being honest, because I'll sit down to play a game on ranked with somebody, and I've got them on 10 life from 30 by turn 4 or 5. And then if they try to win, I play Mysterious Challenger, which grabs 3 secrets that stalls them out for a turn, and I still win. And it's interesting seeing people trying to play around with the card restrictions of Standard, because once you sit down, you realize how much is actually available in the card pool. And at least for the following year, like, it's not going to be that much different than Wild, which is the OG vintage Hearthstone, however you want to say that. So yeah, that's pretty much all my thoughts on it currently. If I was sitting down to play Hearthstone right now, I would take whatever deck I know is most consistent and just beat the crap out of people. Cause at least for the next, I'd say 2 weeks until people learn to play Thin decks properly, you're going to have tons of time available to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of like, formats and stuff, I'm addicted to making up formats, and the most recent one I'm looking at is, I kind of reached a point where I'm kind of fed up with Modern.
Yeah. I mean, understandably so. Everybody's fed up with Modern right now.
Yeah. Because one of the things it doesn't do is provide a bridge from Standard. Magic just still just doesn't have that format where your Standard cards are rotating and you want to keep playing with those cards. Where do you go? There isn't really a format for that. And it was a thing that, like, traditionally Modern and Extended were supposed to fill that role, being sort of a bigger card pool than Standard, but not as insane as Legacy. And at this point, Modern, I think, is just too close to Legacy to ever do that. Like, just the bar for power level is way too high. Like, the number of newly printed Standard cards that see Modern play is around the same number as see Legacy play. There's very little that, like, a big, like, Collected Company is probably the biggest, like, Standard card that sees Modern play but not Legacy. I mean, all the Eldrazi, of course, see both. In Legacy, they're good. In Modern, they were absurd. But, like, I was looking at it and I was like, where can we break this down? Like, where can we get a format that's smaller than Modern but makes some sense for an endpoint and produces a better format? And what I've kind of focused in on is Lorwyn, for two very big reasons. One, which is kind of the lesson one, is for story reasons. The big story event called The Mending happened during Time Spiral Block, where just the multiverse was super fucked because Urza opened fucking time portals fucking everywhere and just ripped, things were falling apart. And the Planeswalkers, who previously had, like, godlike powers, a bunch of them had to give up those powers, completely. Other ones just, you know, got toned the fuck down, to keep the multiverse from being destroyed completely because of Urza's fuckery. And that's how we got the Planeswalkers in Lorwyn that are, you know, powerful enough to be, good magic cards and are not just absurd. You know, that can cost 2 to 6 to 8 mana. So that story element is a big deal. Also, just the Planeswalkers as a card type was new with Lorwyn. And I think that marks one of the biggest shifts in design philosophy and approach in Magic's history. And it just the fact that they become like sort of the most powerful permanents on the battlefield, but they're inherently more interactive than artifacts or enchantments. Whereas if you go, you know, any amount of time back, you see these, like, powerful enchantments and artifacts that are difficult to interact with and do just a crazy static thing. They just do one thing, and they do it at an absurd power level, like Trinisphere or Blood Moon or Chalice of the Void. You know, these, you know, just really broadly powerful cards that just do, I say broadly powerful, very powerful, they do one thing very powerful. Power, 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 power. Planeswalkers, on the other hand, are powerful largely for their versatility, in that they can do a bunch of different things effectively, and then have this sort of the threat of their ultimate, which is like this big, powerful thing, but you gotta work for it. And I think those make for fundamentally more interesting games than Blood Moon, or Trinisphere, or, you know, Ensnaring Bridge. And at the same time, they don't work in a format where those sort of cards are legal. Like when, you know, when 3 mana artifacts and enchantments are defining your game, or crazy busted fucking combos are defining your format, there's just no room for a four mana Planeswalker. Like, the best Planeswalker.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, the best Planeswalker in Modern for forever has been Liliana. A, because she costs three fucking mana. Because she costs three fucking mana and is good. But also, like, Liliana of the Veil hasn't even been that good recently. Like, it's been a while since a Liliana deck has been one of the better decks. Like, she's $100, but it's not because of Modern. I can tell you that.
It's more because of Legacy, I believe.
Yeah, Legacy, Commander.
But actually, so, Jeff, what did all of this bring you to, basically? What was the focal point? You said you've been focusing on Lorwyn, but you haven't led us to what this led you to creating yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically that. The format I wouldn't replace Modern with, but that I would try out to be a place where 4-mana sorcery speed cards are good, but don't immediately win the game. Because in Legacy, if it's 4-mana, it's not winning the game, it's not playable. So, like, Jace the Mind Sculptor isn't even really very good in Legacy. He's banned in Modern, which I don't think he would even be that good in Modern right now. So I was looking at ban list, because you gotta do that. And the first thing I noticed was also how many cards from the Modern ban list are from that period from Mirrodin to Timespiral. And, like, seriously, half the Modern ban list is from those 4 years. And then a couple more cards are newer, but are really only banned because of older cards. Like, Punishing Fires is from Zendikar. But that's banned because of Grove of the Burn Willows.
Right.
Like, Green Sun Zenith is banned for pretty good reasons, but it's also, like, way more stupid when you've got Dryad Arbor. Like, when you can just play it for one as a 1-mana ramp spell, that makes it more than just a 1-mana tutor. And it's probably still would be too good as a 1-mana tutor, for a green creature. Like, that's still probably too much for the kind of format I want to see, which is one that would probably not be super combo driven. But also, hey, like, there's no storm mechanic post Lorwyn. No storm.
Precisely.
No rituals need to be banned, though those rituals were all pre Lorwyn anyways, like Rite of Flame and Seething Song. Like, almost all the fast mana that you'd be looking at is pre-Lorwyn, in terms of, like, the rituals, the Chromox, the whatever. I guess we'd still have, like, Mox Opal and the Eldrazi lands, so we'd probably need to keep Eye of Ugin out of harm's way. I think Eldrazi Temple is enough of a reward for its restrictions, without being absurd. But I was thinking, there's not a whole lot post-Lorwyn that you do have to ban. Mental Misstep has to go, because that was just a mistake.
I hate to admit that, but when you had even Goblins that was running Mental Misstep in the board just to beat other Goblin stacks, I think that says something.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot else that I'm sure has to be banned.
The broken ship that's actually left from Lorwyn forward is actually relatively fair. Like, the most egregious thing I can think of off the top of my head is Blue-White Rebel Arc Blink, which can be very, very nasty, make no mistakes about that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I can't think of any other real combos that would matter. Maybe, Heritage Druid decks, but that's it.
Yeah, I think Elves would certainly be a deck. Elves is probably the reason Green Sun Zenith would still need to be banned.
Absolutely.
Treasure Cruise would be too good, and Dig Through Time probably. Like, Treasure Cruise definitely, I'd love to see a format where Dig Through Time is okay, but it's just the bigger the format, the better those cards are. Like, they scale to their size, so you couldn't really do that. Birthing Pod is just too good. And we've got a cool different way of doing that in Collected Company. That's just a more interesting card that is slots into kind of the same decks.
Plus you get to see cool decks like Blue-Green Merfolk use it.
Yeah. The Merfolk, they're still a thing, but
Merfolk wouldn't be that bad. We ban Stoneforge Mystic? That's a good question.
That's a tough one, because I think the ban is Batterskull.
I feel like that's honestly a good call, because, like, I, before the bans actually came down and made me just drop all interest in Modern period, I was testing Stoneforge Mystic for a really long time, and I tested it in Blue-White Merfolk, which was sick. I tested it in Fairies. I tested it in pretty much everything. Stoneforge Mystic by itself is actually not that egregious. And even swords.
The card was like, not good until Mirrodin block, until Scars of Mirrodin block, and we got swords.
So even like the swords aren't actually that egregious. Mm-hmm. Like Sword of Feast and Famine is probably the worst you can actually grab with it.
Mm-hmm.
That'll affect people. But honestly, whenever I grab Batterskull, that turned games around.
Yeah.
Like I could be losing and Batterskull would win me the game. The only other thing that came close to Batterskull in terms of like raw potential for swing, was believe it or not, Loxodon on Warhammer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the lifelink.
Yeah, and that was the only reason for it. And Batterskull can actually protect itself from removal, which is far more problematic.
Yeah, it's also, it has a more inevitability than a spell of its cost should, especially once you've gotten it, like, tutored it up with Stoneforge and stuff like that. Like, it's hard to play a long game against a Batterskull. And the other thing it did that was really, really bad was that it would create these, like, the mirror matches. Would just last.
So
they were interminable.
Long.
They were the worst fucking games because
and see,
they would just both get a Batterskull, and they would just like be hitting each other and not and just get too much life to ever end the game. It would just be horrible.
And see, even actually in what you're talking about as well, the problem with Batterskull in Modern is Crows and Grip is a thing, but not everybody's gonna run Crows and Grip, which means you need to wait until the Batterskull player is tapped out. And in what you've created, I think banning Batterskull would actually be the fair. Offense there. Because, like, Crows and Grip isn't around, which means you literally have to wait until that person's tapped out to do that, and I don't think that's very intuitive to competitive play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be super hard to get rid of a Batterskull. And I think Stoneforge with Feast and Famine in a larger format would be okay. Because, like, swords are, like, even when you can tutor them up with Stoneforge Mystic, they're clunky. Like, it's a 5-mana investment before you even get anything out
for
of them.
Very minimal effect. And even like the best equipment I can honestly think of off the top of my head is Skull Clamp, Sword of Feast and Famine, and Sword of Fire and Ice. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Skull Clamp and Fire and Ice are original Mirrodin blocks, so they wouldn't be in this format.
Yeah. And
like,
so
Feast and Famine would be far and away the best legal equipment.
Right. And honestly, like what you're looking at with Feast and Famine is basically you're getting two turns for free if you manage to swing. But you're having to invest 5 mana originally to do that, and you're also having to really hope that they don't have the removal for your creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also, like, the trouble I have with a lot of these cards is that they may have been dominating, but they were dominating in a standard format a long time ago.
Yeah.
And haven't actually gotten to see play in any larger format. Like, you know, Stormforge Mystic has been good in, you know, is still decently good in Legacy. Like, it's been a good Legacy deck. Largely because of Batterskull, not because of the swords. Yes, those get played, but they're the second and third targets rather than the first.
Yeah.
Like, Batterskull's almost always the first thing they get. But like, Jace has never been legal in Modern and hasn't really been good enough in Legacy. It was a little bit, but not really. Like some other ones like that. Cards that were already banned. Yeah, I mean, it was also like, Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time didn't get a lot of time. They got banned pretty quickly, but it was kind of obvious.
Yeah. I mean, they're incredibly degenerative.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of the justifications people came up with for Treasure Cruise, it was never going to be played in a deck where you weren't going to draw three for one with it.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
It was too good. There were some people who argued for it staying legal, and it did stay legal in Legacy, but even that proved to be too much.
Yeah.
So. I don't think it would be okay with in this format. Also, the other reason to ban it is Tassigar and Gurmag Angler are way more interesting.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, you can still play a Delve deck just with zombies.
let's go ahead and wrap this segment up.
Stoneforge and Jace are the ones that didn't get played in a bigger non-Eternal format. So
I think those would be two really good data points as well.
Yeah. It's also possible that you can't have both of them legal together.
And see, that's something worth mentioning too, because, Jeff, did you play during the Callblade days?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Honestly, it was just a problem of too many good things happening at once. I mean, cause even, Squadron Hawk, that's still, you were drawing 3 cards for 2 mana, technically, air quotes around that. And then being able to scale effectively from Stoneforge Mystic into Sword into Jace, equipped swing was just too much.
Yeah.
So I feel like, and see, the problem was at the time too, Jace was able to bounce, draw, do everything to stall as long as possible to keep your turn going. So, I feel like either one or the other would be fine. The only problem I see with maybe having Jace legal is the rise of an extremely powerful blue deck. And it's not just because Jace exists, it's because in this format you would have Jace, Cryptic Command, a lot of really good, like, situational 2-to-1 mana counters, and then very, very, very fucking relevant blue creatures.
Yeah, the big ones that are also on, like, that modern ban list are Ponder and Preordain. Like, I don't think we could have both of those.
Not with Delver, unless you ban Delver.
Yeah. And that's the other one, is Delver is a big one that, like, Delver and Jace might be more of a problem than Stoneforge and Jace.
I could see that.
Like, I'd be really tempted. I was looking at this, and the more I was thinking about it, like, it might be ban Delver or ban, like, 5 blue cards.
I feel like if you ban Delver, like, people can go back and forth on Ponder and Preordain a lot. I never considered those as bad as what decks they got played in, because the gulf between what they were played in was Delver and Control.
Yeah.
And you know, the occasional tempo.
Like, in Modern, they were banned for making combos too consistent, more than anything. In Standard, they were banned because they made Control too good. Yeah, that's a tough one. And Delver also, unlike some of the other ones, Delver has been good in every format forever. Like, Delver has always been good. Like, even Modern, where they took away Ponder and Preordain, they're like, well, we'll Serum Vision away. We'll just do that and still be a good deck. So, it might be more Delver interesting to have a format without Delver. That might also make, like, Zoo decks more viable.
It absolutely would.
Like, you know, Wild in the Cattle is more appealing when you don't have a flying Wild in the Cattle as an alternative. So yeah, that might be a thing. The other sort of big worries in the format, Infect doesn't lose a whole lot. They basically lose one of their pump spells and Pendlehaven. So I'd have to keep an eye on that. It would be hard to ban them. Like, it's hard to just pick what to ban. I think you'd have to ban one of the creatures, like probably the Blighted Agent, the blue one that's unwalkable. If you take away that, it forces them to, I think, to diversify a little bit and be a little less consistent. So that bears watching. Scapeshift, it probably becomes the best combo, and there's not a whole lot you can ban out of that either other than Scapeshift. Because, like, they don't even really lean on Prismatic Omen all that much. Like, I'd probably try with that being the thing, but Scapeshift probably wouldn't be able to stick around for the format to be what I think it should be. Like, I think turn 4 combo is, I would still say, is too fast for this kind of format. Malira. The Malira combo still exists, and, like, you can, there's other ways of doing it, either off Court of Calling or Collected Company, stuff like that, and it's, the tricky thing is it's super hard to disrupt once it's going, because it's all, like, an instant speed sacrifice and triggers. So it can be tricky to disrupt as a combo, despite being creature based. And one that I think would be fine, but would kind of be the next combo, is Pyromancer Ascension, but without Storm. So just kind of doing a bunch of work and then getting 2-for-1s on all your burn spells and stuff, which I think that would be fine. I think that's the kind of combo deck you want to have.
Right.
Rather than Scapeshift, I win. Like, there's also the fact that Splinter Twin still exists. Like, that would still be legal. Kiki Jiki's gone for this format, but Twin is there, and there's a bunch of different ways to combo off of it. So if you keep that Chief Library manipulation, sort of that blue-red Splinter Twin combo control tempo deck still exists and is problematic. So Splinter Twin probably would get the axe too. Like, if Scapeshift gets the axe, Twin does. Like, previously with Modern, I proposed, like, just banning Deceiver Exarch, to force it to, like, play a third color and be a little less resilient, because that 4 toughness just made it a little harder to disrupt. Red didn't have a lot of 4 mana spells that weren't super, super, super narrow. Like, you kind of needed Path or Dismember to have a 1 mana answer to that. So those are kind of the big concerns. I think Jund would be fine even with, Bloodbraid Elf. I don't think Bloodbraid Elf would need to be banned.
Jund isn't the boogeyman that everybody makes it out to be, to be quite honest. Like, Bloodbraid Elf is just a really fucking good card. But it's not good enough to be banned, in my personal.
It doesn't break the rules, really. It breaks.
No, you can still beat John.
Some mana efficiency, but it's not doing anything really crazy on its own. Like, I'd be more worried about Deathrite Shaman. That might just have a warping effect. But I feel like there should be a Jund deck, and there's a decent chance the Jund deck would actually be an Abzan deck, because of, like, I think Siege Rhino would be good in this format. It wouldn't be
very good.
What it was in standard, but it would be good.
Also, having Siege Rhino handy would offset the damage you would probably get from using Putrid Leech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could do stuff like Putrid Leech. Like, it's got a bunch of options. Voice of Resurgence is still a very good card that gets played in the modern Abzan decks. So, I think. But also, those decks all would be a lot less powerful without Tarmogoyf, which is the big one we haven't mentioned yet. There would be no Tarmogoyf in this format. And that's another one where, boy, that card's gotten to be good in every single format ever. So, give it a rest. Give Tarmogoyf a rest. I'm gonna say it. Let's just give Delver a rest. I'm putting Delver on the bench in this format until someone proves me wrong.
Absolutely.
But that's a card you can play fucking anywhere, and it just breaks so many rules. It just invalidates so many cards on its own. So, and at the same time, pulls up a whole other class of cards that I think would be fine, and that other decks should have access to. Like, I'd be fine with there being a bunch of kind of like tier 2 to 3 combos that, you know, might be like 3 cards or something, or have a 5 mana element and, you know, not have the kind of redundancy that some of these other combos have. But, you know, Polinorn Preordain. Like, I don't know. There would probably be a reasonable Jeskai Ascendancy combo. That's the thing to look at, but that's
reasonable.
A super...
is, we have air quotes around the word reasonable on this podcast, sir.
Reasonable as in without Treasure Cruise. It's a super fragile deck without Treasure Cruise, because it has to, it's really drawing like a card at a time, and it's super easy for that chain to break. And there's also just, there's better interaction in modern. So like there's better creature removal. So I think it would be reasonable. I don't think it would be super turbo fast, and it's got plenty of angles to disrupt it from. So I think it'd be all right. It would bear watching too, but it'd be fine.
Alrighty. Since I'm still relatively awake, that actually, all joking aside, Jeff, that does sound really good. And we probably need to like write this down in the show notes. And maybe one of our adventurous listeners will actually get around to testing it. Is there anything else you want to touch on? We're going on about an hour 30 here.
Yeah, I am writing it up. I am going to put it on Card Confidants. I'm just still working on that.
Okay. Awesome. Good. Get to work.
Yeah. Other little things I wanted to mention, or did you have any other little things you wanted to mention? I'm gonna talk a bunch about this. Yeah, my fake.
Honestly, I'm pretty fucking exhausted at this point, man. It's been a long day. I had to chase a 5-year-old around a children's museum all day, which is a very misleading name. Like, a children's museum is anything but. It's a giant fucking playhouse. Just call it what it is.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm tired, and I'm almost in bed.
So, a couple things I'll just hit on quickly. I finally got around to starting playing Borderlands. I don't have like a verdict on it yet, but short version so far is that it's less depressing Fallout.
Yeah, it's a very optimistic game. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's similar more in aesthetic, and it's very specific to have a different aesthetic, but it's still a wasteland. You're running around shooting things with guns, blowing things up. So there's some genre similarities. But at the same time, it works a lot differently, and it feels very, very different. I think for a long time, I didn't play it because it was kind of that desolated wasteland setting that I wasn't interested in. But the unique texturing that makes it look more hand-drawn, and the humor in there, which is, more overt than Borderlands. Than Fallout. Also Claptrap being kind of a little like Gurr from Invader Zim doesn't fucking hurt for me at all. Like, I don't care how much they fucking borrow. Like,
he's awesome. A good mascot.
Yeah. Yeah. Claptrap's good. And, also a guy that it's hard to do an episode of the podcast without me mentioning him, but Mikey Newman, he was like the lead writer and on that. He voices Scooter, the Catch a Ride guy. And so it's seeped with Mikey Newman's essence. Sounds bad, but hey, it's cool. Yeah. By the way, go check out Chainsaw Suit Original on YouTube. His movie reviews are amazing. He If you thought there was no more to be said about Mad Max Fury Road, he found it. And I may have just pronounced that furry, but it's Fury. So.
You pronounced it Fury Road, which was actually the Fury Road is a different movie entirely. Yeah, and I promise you it was not nearly as entertaining. It was really awkward, vaguely stomach-churning, and yeah, we'll leave it
there. Yeah, porns are not known for their action set pieces or practical effects.
Much less furry porn.
Yeah. Costumes are there, but yeah.
Yeah.
he also did Ex Machina, which I'm actually avoiding because I want to just watch that movie first before I get the deep take on it. But that movie, he had good things to say about that in his top five of 2015. So looking forward to that. He's also got Star Wars Force Awakens coming up. So
do you ever watch Everything Wrong with Blank? Where they do like I think it's Cinema Sins.
Yeah, I've seen those. Mikey, much like my motive in this podcast, is he tries to stay positive with movies. Like, he, a lot of the stuff he's done is kind of older, slightly more obscure movies that he sends up and finds ways to like, or points out things that are not appreciated, or stuff that's like good, especially if you go back and watch it, but like kind of flopped or didn't have a lot of critical acclaim when it came out. Like, The Long Kiss Goodnight is one of my favorite movies, and he loves it to death, so. And points out all kinds of stuff that I didn't know about it that's awesome, so. Like, it's like, this is actually a really complex and deep movie. It's not just, like, a funny action movie spoof. There's a lot fucking going on here, so. I'm plugging Mikey Newman more than he usually plugs himself on his own podcasts, which is something. He understands his self-promotion, but he hates to do it, which I totally get. So,
anything else?
Plug what I can. The one other little thing, and this is a fun note, I think, to go out on, is I could not stop myself from starting to build another cube. And this cube, the design restriction, which has to be a pretty tight design restriction if I'm going to build a cube around it, it is cards that sound like metal bands.
Oh, holy fuck. Didn't we do this as a segment a couple of months back?
We did once with Harley do, like, name that magic card tune. Like, name a magic card, and then what's that song, and, like, who's it by, and what genre is it?
You have to do interpretive representations of these bands every time you play a card. I deem it so.
Well, I think, like, when you play the card, you have to be like, Salt Blast!
Do you get mandatory metal hair wigs every time you bring this cube out?
You should wear metal hair wigs when playing. That is true.
That is great. How far along are you in it?
I've got like 150 plus cards pulled. I just was pouring through cards and I found shit like Steel of the Godhead. Like, that sounds fucking metal as shit, right?
That's a Norwegian, like, Christian metal band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that, like, sort of fantasy metal like Nightwish exists really helps the cause, because like there's lots of stuff about dragons that's super metal, you know, like dragon blood, you know, we get to just have Into the North. That sounds like a fucking Norse metal band for sure. We've got a few cards that are actual metal bands, like Iron Maiden and Manowar.
Don't we have a Holy Diver too, or something like that?
I'm sure there's a bunch of these that are, like, I'm sure Army of the Damned is a metal band somewhere. Lone Wolf is an actual band. I hadn't really heard of them, but they exist. We have Mastodon. It's not Mastodon, but Mastodons around.
Mastodon is definitely a weird psychedelic metal band now. Have you listened to any of their recent stuff?
Nope.
Oh, dude, yeah. What is it? Around the Sun or whatever it was, which was their last album, I think. Holy hell! Mm-hmm. I need to drop a lot more LSD before I listen to that album again. Oh my god.
Be a lot more high. I realized God Toucher. God Toucher sounds pretty fucking hardcore. No, classics like Juggernaut. There's gonna be a lot of fucking board sweepers. Because, like, Wrath of God, Final Judgment, you know, most of the Red Sweepers, those are all pretty good. Also, Thrag Tusk. Come on. Like,
that sounds like a really, really bad, like, local band, though. It's a metal band, but you don't like...
But you can see it in metal font. Like, that's one of my one of my, like, standards for this is, can you picture it in that, like, heavy metal white-on-black font?
The pile of sticks.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Malevolent Awakening, you know, fucking Raging Goblin. Oh, Flesh Reaver, that's a highlight for sure. This one is, I didn't think of it first, but when I really read it and thought about it, Shiv's Embrace.
Oh, that's totally a metal band. Blood Gas, too. Don't forget that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also, like, I haven't really been looking for red and black cards, because there's a ton of them. It's finding, like, the blue, white, and green ones that's going to be tough. So, I'll put a link to the Cube Tutor, in progress. I was a little impressed, good, like, how many, like, death cards there are in, like, green. Like, Death's Present. There's a bunch of, like, death snakes. Snakes are pretty metal.
Death is very much a part of nature and metal, to be fair.
Yeah.
I do have something worth ending on here. I guess mm-hmm. two items, I guess I should mention. I'll save the one for contact information. So Mortal Kombat 10 dropped a couple of months ago, and apparently, like, the writers went all out to actually, like, try and enjoy the dialogue between the characters. So today on YouTube, when I was at work, I found 5 minutes where it's nothing but the characters doing introductions with each other. The smack talk in Mortal Kombat 10 is on a level I've never seen. It's great. It is so fucking great, especially from Johnny Cage, who, you know, is the long-time running joke character, the Hollywood movie actor that joins the tournament or whatever. Johnny Cage is perfect this time around, so go check that out. Anyways, I guess I'm finished, Jeff. You want to do contact info?
Yep. I feel like I have run smack into a wall.
Me too. I am pretty fucking tired, and except my wall was composed of giggling five-year-olds. I peer away in the dark, I see the stars through me. Tired mechanical heart beats till the song disappears.